Laipni lūgts, programma Viena balsi. Today we are very glad to receive Oksana Nikičiuk. Oksana, thank you for being with us today. You are a singer, also choir conductor, musicologist, and you're coming from, you are Ukrainian. I'm curious to know, though you are a European performer, you have been singing in London, Paris, also Germany. What bring you to Latvia? Indeed, there is the context of the war, who started in 2014, and in 2022 we know the story. But why Latvia, more specifically, in the first place?
Well, first of all, thank you for invitation, and of course I'm glad to be here. About Latvia, of course, life is divided before war and after. And of course, if there will be no war, I would stay in my country, in my land, because I love my land and I would never leave. And but life is life, and for me, Latvia was the best country for choirs and choir singing. Mm. And choir conductor is my first and main specialty. So it was just a dream to come to Riga or to Latvia. And if anyone would tell me that I will have a concert in Riga, for me it was would be so important, because it's like the highest choir level. So maybe that's why, because I sang in it's true, in many cities, in many countries, but when I got invitation to come to Riga to sing with Sinfonietta, mm-hmm. I took it with a lot of responsibility and happiness that I'm coming.
How would you describe the difference between Latvian approach to choirs and your Ukrainian experience? It may be the tones of voice or the way to conduct. How does it interact?
I would say that Ukrainian and Latvian choirs are great, both great, but they're so different because of the sound. If Ukrainian choirs, it would be full of blood sound.
Oh wow.
And Latvian would be so pure and clear and straight and very simple in outside, but very strong inside. And mentality is so different. So when working with the choir, would be totally different ways. And I had an experience working with Latvian choirs. I was learning, learning again how to be a choir master and how to communicate and explain simply and not emotionally. Mm-hmm. And maybe thanks to this Latvian choristers, to understand with simplicity, understand how deep could be the meaning.
I've listened to you a lot, and there you have a wide range of possibilities into your singing skills. You can sing very classical, even baroque things, like more piano and voice. But there are these
folk songs.
Yeah. Which are kind of, I didn't understand if it was traditional songs or things you created yourself, or there is maybe a base of Ukrainian culture that you transform. And these songs, they speak directly to the soul. It's emotionally, you cannot cheat. I would like to know more, and if you could elaborate on these kind of songs.
Well, folk music and folk songs are my true love. And so if anyone would ask what my hobby is, I would say music, but folk music. I would spend hours and hours and days listening to this old ladies singing Ukrainian folk songs. And I was trying to understand how these women without musical education could sing this half quarter eighths of tones and be so rhythmical and stay in the same pitch for the longest songs for like 20 or 24 verses. I was trying to copy at first their manner, but also I understand that for those women it was natural to sing in that way. But we grow, we improve, and I live in 21st century, and I cannot just copy this old ladies to sing folk songs. So to be natural, I'm trying to sing these folk songs without using academical vocal school, just with a simple sound, but of course using what I've heard from these ladies. So maybe it's some kind of mix of manners, mix of sounds, the way of producing the sounds, and it just gives this, I don't know, maybe unique or not unique sound, but special, and it's simple. And then it's easy with this folk songs, it's easy to speak with audience. Like if I feel something and I want to send this emotion with a simple sound, it's much easier for me than with academic vocals, vocal sound.
I'm surprised because I would have thought it's not really easy to get out of academic training that sometimes can be very hard.
Well, I was lucky not to study vocal in conservatory.
Okay.
And I was educated in the choir. So it's not common for Ukraine because usually the kids go to music school, then music college, then conservatory. I skipped the music school. I was singing in the choir, and in this choir there was piano sessions, solfeggio, so everything I learned from the choir, and then I was just singing with the nature. And didn't enter conservatory for a vocal. So maybe that's why I'm lucky that I don't have rules. I have freedom. Зеленая лишіно ніко на ярбо. Козака вдалося. Як і очі, так і брови, така й тихо за
Well, it entails my next question. There are, in these songs, these kind of songs, there are tragic stories. But is it also a way to connect to this very specific concept about Ukrainians, about the sense of freedom? The name is Vojna?
Volya.
Is there a connection between this this state of mind and this kind of music?
Everything goes from history of our land, because Ukrainians truly love their land and truly love Volya, which is freedom and like wisdom. And in all songs, practically in all every song, there would be the story about war, about defending Ukraine or missing Ukraine or crying for Ukraine or for mother crying for children, for the sons. So it's in every song. And maybe it's like in blood and goes from generation to generation. I was, for the concerts, I was in Switzerland. And their musician said that in Switzerland, there would be, from the whole folk songs, there would be maybe two in minor. And everything else, like it's made major happy songs. Mm-hmm. But in Ukraine, it's the other way around. Everything is in minor, but it's not weak. It's with wisdom and will to freedom.
This song you were singing in Liepaja Dzintar's concert hall. I catch the name that was translated in Latvian, which is Saules Putis Selš. And what strikes me is you sing it like if it was a psalm, In your work as a choir director, there are also some religious song like Christos Voskresne. What is the spiritual part in when you are singing?
Church singing. I was singing in the church choir since I'm 18, and. I was a choir conductor in the church choir, and it's like a huge part of my life, being in church and also learning old Slavic language and how to pronounce and singing and reading from this ancient books, with this really nice writing with old Slavic letters. And it's special, so it's not possible just to read it. For example, in one word, it would be one letter and the first letter and the last letter, and then the letters in the middle would be just drawn as a picture. So you just need to get used to read all this. So for me, and maybe for in general for Ukrainian choral culture, Orthodox singing is like the main part, Orthodox and folk songs, and maybe some part for the classical, and now like it's common to sing Baroque music. But the church is very important. It's like it's all church holidays, church services. In every church in Kiev and Ukraine, in every village, there would be a church with the choir. So the main repertoire for the choir, it would be Orthodox singing. Also, I was always interested in chants, in Greek chants and in Kiev chant. And I spend time now also learning these melodies and words. And also, I know that some of the scores for Kiev chants, they are in Russian libraries. So we're trying to get these scores and bring them back to Ukraine and to state that it's a Kiev chant and it needs to be sung with pronunciation of Slavic language, was, for example, letter G in Russian language is G, mm-hmm. and in Ukrainian it's H. Mm-hmm. So, for example, word Gospody in Russian, in Slavic language and in Ukrainian it's a Hospody. So there are some nuances of pronunciation of the texts and elements of melodies. We're trying to get back what was stolen at some point.
That sounds close, but even more ancient, that what happened when in 1991 after Russian back to Moscow and fly away from Latvia, the archives were stolen. So Latvian, to some extent, are not able to rewrite the history, especially about KGB and Cheka, mm-hmm. and all these things. This is kind of the same dynamic. I don't know if you ever had the opportunity to listen to Latgalian singing. Yeah, but maybe speaks to you very deeply as well.
Yeah, I'm really interested in folk music and folk singing. So maybe the first thing I did when I came to Latvia, I was asking people about real folk songs, like Latvian folk songs, and I really wanted to learn them. So I listened to this Latgalian singing, and it is close to the sound is close to central part of Ukraine, and language is interesting. Some pronunciation are the same, like more Slavic pronunciation. So it was interesting to learn it. And also in State Choir Latvia, there's Latvian composer Richards Dubra. He wrote the piece for the choir, Tuskaisto Diva Dorza Rosa. It's in Latgalian, and there's a solo parts for two singers. So I was for some concerts I was privileged and happy to sing this, and it was so interesting to learn the manner, to learn the words, and the music is so deep and beautiful and understandable for in any country, I think, because with this piece choir went to concert trip to Georgia, and after this piece, audience just, you know, blew up, and with applauses, and they took it really you know, to the heart.
I'm curious to understand, what language do you speak when you communicate inside Latvian choir or where you make direction of Latvian choirs?
When I came to Latvia, I spent maybe 6 or 7 hours a day for a couple of months to learn the language, because it's natural if I come to another country, I learn the language. But the first thing I learned was numbers, because I needed them in rehearsal, like when the conductor says where we start to sing. And of course, Latvian. I'm lucky that Latvian know English and switch to English when I don't understand Latvian. And of course, older generation know Russian. And to be kind, they try to switch. But in general, it's English and Latvian. I noticed in Riga that if I try to say something in Latvian, to be kind, people could switch to Russian, but it's not helpful because the history shows that language is very important, and it's better to keep native language.
It's a very important topic as well. In Ukraine, not everybody is speaking Ukrainian, but there is a mix of something like a midpoint between Russian and Ukrainian, like Russian grammar with Ukrainian words, or and a lot of variety of what is called Surzik.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is a strange mix, and some Ukrainians say that when they're thinking, when they're speaking, they have the feelings, if they switch to Russian, to betray their own identity and to betray their country. I have friends mm-hmm. who feel that way. Maybe this is also some related to what you were mentioning.
Yeah, now after war started, it's... this language question is more painful than before. And Ukrainian language for so many times was forbidden. And unfortunately, it is close to Russian. So the words mix and the surzhik, that's why we have the surzhik, because of this mix of languages. But for now, even those people who spoke Russian before, they try to switch to Ukrainian, and especially when we're abroad, like that's the identity. If you hear someone speaking Ukrainian, you would naturally say, "Oh, it's ours," and you would just come up and say hello and ask something.
Yeah, we can also. Say that a lot of Ukrainians were welcome after February 2022, learned Latvian faster in 6 months than some people who are Russian speakers in Latvia for 30 years.
Yeah, and I think it's not about to be talented, it's about to be respectful to the country that you live in.
In Latvian magazine, once you gave an interview where the headline was "Culture is also political." So this is also a related topic. We are not able to do this interview again, indeed. But if you can also tell us a couple of words about this.
Of course, culture is political because it's music. It's thoughts of like the best people of nation. It's composers, writers, their thoughts are important. And in Ukraine, we were allowing all these Russian composers for so long. we didn't know Ukrainian music. In for example, in conservatory, there was the history of Russian music, the history of Western European music, but there wasn't anything about Ukrainian composers. Also, Ukrainian students wouldn't know any Latvian composers or Estonian or Finnish or Polish. And in Kiev, I wouldn't see the concert program with Central or Eastern European composers. And in Latvia, I wouldn't see the poster with Ukrainian composers. So we don't know anything about each other. But all of us know Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff. I'm not a big fan. Like, I tell the truth, I'm not a big fan of Tchaikovsky. I like music of Rachmaninoff, but I would never play or sing it now. Because if I go on the stage, it's my responsibility what I say and what I sing from the stage. And if I sing Russian composers, why? Like, it's not true. And it's not right to my colleagues and friends who are now defending my land. So yeah, music is political.
According to what I know, Tchaikovsky had a father who was Ukrainian.
There's the whole story now about his grandfather was Ukrainian. But he refused to be Ukrainian. His last name was Chaika, but he wanted to be Russian and changed the last name to Tchaikovsky. And there's also this humiliating name that Russians used for Ukraine is Malorossiya. So it's little Russia. And that's how Tchaikovsky called Ukraine in his letters.
Okay.
So there is a group of people that that like push this idea that Tchaikovsky is Ukrainian composer.
Mm-hmm.
But like I don't I'm not in that group, and I don't think it's the right thing to do, especially now. In Ukraine we have National Academy of Ukraine, and mm-hmm. it's still by the name of Tchaikovsky. No, it's not right. We have great composer Letoshinsky, that is like a fundamental classical composers for Ukrainian school, but not Tchaikovsky.
Is there a composer in the Baltics that you would like to work with? Could write a piece for you, or?
Well, that's the good question, because that is what I used to do in Ukraine. I was friends and like colleagues with composers, and they were writing for me, and I was singing their music and editing and working together, changing something in the scores. It's very interesting. And here in Latvia, in the state choir, I was singing together with Liva Bluma. She's composer, she's young composer. And we had an idea to create a vocal cycle with Ukrainian and Latvian folk tunes. So the bass is folk, the words are also folk, but music is contemporary. And we sang it with Andrei Asokin, in the concert, a great pianist. So we actually did something new for Latvian music with Ukrainian spirit in it. But from the composers that we sang, I sang in the choir, of course, I like Vasks and I like Eschenwalds. For me in Ukraine, it was something like you know, not reachable. The composers that I just heard the name, and then I see them in the choir rehearsal. And I'm not a child, but I was looking at them and listening to them as a kid. And the first time I sang solo was the state choir. I've seen Vasks in audience, and also I've felt as a student, and I know that it's really responsible to sing, and I need to do a good job because he's listening.
He's a great human being, apart from being a very great composer and very accessible.
Yes, that's
the contrary of no one snobbish. Do you know Andrei Selitskis? Because I really believe it could be a connection with him in terms of, you know, this spiritual thing and Orthodox music. He is an amazing person as well, very connected with the divine. And it would be a very interesting experience, I believe.
Well, now I need to find him.
There is a whole interview, and this is I'm very touched by when you say that in Ukraine you didn't know the composers of the Baltics, and that we need to know each other. This is true, and the paradox was during Soviet times. As the there was some form of despise from people in Moscow towards composers in the Baltics, there was not as much as censorship as you would expect. And but this is really necessary to know better.
Well, being abroad, it's important to save native culture and music, Ukrainian music, and to tell about Ukrainian music in Latvia, for example. But it's also important to build connections and to see how these cultures can communicate and connect together. So I think that's important also, not just to keep my own culture and to be isolated from Latvian.
My last question is the same for all the guests. What is your first memory in your childhood connected to sound or music?
Well, maybe it's the question from my mom. What I would like, I was maybe 5 or 6, and she asked me what I would like to do, like after kindergarten, like to sing or dance. And I don't know why, I don't have any musicians in the family. And I said that I want to sing in the choir. And it was a surprise for everyone because no one sang in the choir. And I don't know why I said that, but I still sing in the choir. And we, with my mom, we were living in, I don't know this word in English, it's the big apartment before revolution in 1917. It was like one family's apartment, like 6 or 7 rooms. And then in Soviet Union, they would divide this big apartment for many families. So we were living in the center of Kiev, but in one room of this apartment. And we didn't have the telephone book, so the number for the choir, all the telephone numbers, everyone was writing on the wall, and I knew how to write numbers, so I wrote this telephone number, not to forget, for the choir, I wrote it on the wall, and then when I grew up, we had this telephone number written on the wall, and the numbers were written as kids, not correctly. This telephone number for the choir, it was there on this wall. So that was maybe, that's my memory that I don't know why, but I answered, I want to sing in the choir.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much for being with us. If you enjoy watching this program, please share it on social network, subscribe. And you can also help with buymeacoffee.com/Vienna Balsi. We hope to see you very soon here. Bye-bye. Thank you.